Folks are blessed who make the best of every day, living by their own philosophy. Everyone beneath the sun must find a way, and I have found the only way for me. I don't believe in fretting and grieving. Why mess around with strife? I never was cut out to step and strut out. Give me the simple life.
Steve Terrell had a great and enviable career for over three decades as a Grammy-winning producer of just about everyone who was anyone in the top 40 list, from Dolly and Bette to Elton and Stevie. But now he says he's having the time of his life on the other side of the microphone, crooning his way through the Great American Songbook at the Cafe Carlyle. He's appearing there Tuesday through Saturday nights, now through December 31st, and I'm very happy to welcome him here today.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I'm honored.
That's a pretty dramatic turn of events. This is the time at the Carlyle when Bobby Short traditionally performed a pretty prominent gig.
Yeah. Well, he had played there 36 years in a row without ever missing those 2 months. Sometimes he played all year, but he never missed November and December, so... When Bobby passed away and they asked me to step in and take that holiday season, I was completely flattered and honored, and I've been marching along ever since.
How many years now?
This is my fifth year.
Have other record producers made the switch to performing?
No, I don't think so. I don't know who it would be, but I was first a singer and made records when I was a kid in high school, you know, and we recorded in... I'm from Houston, Texas, and we used to go down and work in New Orleans with Alan Toussaint and Dr. John, you know. And
I hear a little Dr. John.
Oh, yeah, there. Man, that's my buddies. Those are my buddies to this day, you know, and Aaron Neville and the Neville brothers. I produced some of Aaron's records. The one that he did with Linda Ronstadt, Don't Know Much, I produced that with Peter Asher, Linda's manager. Anyway, so I started doing that as an artist and playing in Louisiana, and then I always had a sense of writing songs and producing, you know. So a lot of the guys in the other bands would ask me to do their records, and I ultimately switched. I got B.J. Thomas became kind of my alter ego, you know. He was a great singer, and when I got a job in New York City, I was 19 years old. I talked the record company into signing B.J. And so.
And then that led to Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head.
Ultimately, but we had big hits before that. We had I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry and Hooked on a Feeling and The Eyes of a New York Woman and then Raindrops and then plenty after that. He was a great artist.
Well, that song, of course, became the theme for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance mm-hmm. Kid. Did you just produce it and other people take it further? Or did you play a
No,
part?
What I was I had become head of A&R and promotion for Scepter Records. That's how I moved to New York. This legendary lady named Florence Greenberg gave me a job. And I was 19 years old, and I fell into this incredible situation with Burt Bacharach and Hal David, and Dionne Warwick were just starting out. Carole King and Jerry Goffin were just starting out. We had two writers in the other office that turned, you know, that had never written a hit yet. That turned out to be Valerie Simpson and Nick Ashford. So it was we all kind of grew up together. And then Barry Mann and Cynthia Wilde, that whole Brill Building scene, you know. So I was head of A&R, and I ultimately became vice president of A&R. And I used to put those, and I signed B.J. Thomas and put him together with Burt Bacharach and Hal David. And that song almost didn't make the movie.
Now, A&R is artists and repertoire,
mm-hmm.
And that means pairing the right person with the right song. Of course, today that's no longer the case because people write their own songs in most cases. But what makes for a good producer? Is it a matter of hearing that this artist will do well with this song? Is it a matter of coming up with the right kind of instrumentation behind it?
Some of that. I always compare a record producer to the director of a film, you know? We have basically the same roles. You know, someone wrote the script maybe, and there's an actor there, and your job is to get the performance, you know. Like most recently I've done, my work has been with Rod Stewart, you know. And
you're still producing?
Oh, yeah. I produced Rod's new album, Soul Book, which is which is doing very well for him all over the world. And you know, when I made this album, A New Standard, the one that I'm playing at the Carlisle, it was kind of like an accident. I mean, I had sung those songs in Father of the Bride, and people started saying to me, you should make an album of standards. And I thought, who would buy it?
Well, with Rod Stewart, you have an album of different kinds of standards, and which is rock standards. And since you are a producer of rock and pop and country, I would have thought that that's where you would have gone.
Well, I would have naturally. That's what I always did, you know. When I sang The Way You Look Tonight in Father of the Bride, I was working on
that. Was 1991.
Yeah, I was working on that movie as a producer, music producer. And I had worked on many movies and many television shows, and they'd hire me to do the music in the movies and whatever. So I asked the director, you know, what do you want your band to play at the reception? And what kind of band do you want, you know, like a bar mitzvah band or, you know, like a disco? You can have any kind of band in a wedding reception. And they said they didn't know but what kind of band, but they wanted those great words of Dorothy Fields over the scene when Steve Martin saw his daughter dancing with her husband for the first time. And so I Frank Sinatra's version of The Way You Look Tonight was a swinging one, you know. Mm-hmm. So I went in and made this version that ultimately ended up being in the movie, and I didn't know who was going to sing it, so I put a scratch vocal track on, and they all loved it, and they put me in the movie. And the next thing you know, it just kind of changed my life. People started telling me I should make standards albums, and I finally did.
Like, well, you mentioned that Dorothy Fields wrote that wonderful lyric to The Way You Look Tonight. She wrote a lot of great lyrics. Is it the lyric that grabs you first?
In those songs, there's a magic in the Great American Songbook, you know, that somehow blends incredible romantic lyrics with wonderful harmonic chords and music. I mean, Jerome Kern, let's face it, wrote the music. We got to tip our hat to him too, you know. But Dorothy Fields was, you know, there's something about someday when I'm awfully low and the world is cold, I will feel a glow just, you know.
Thinking of you.
Yeah, thinking of you. The way you look tonight. Yeah, I mean, that's fantastic poetry, you know. And she's, that song changed my life. It changed everybody's life because ultimately I didn't make an album. I was offered to make an album after the Father of the Bride movie, and I thought, who would buy one of my albums, you know? And then when I did the second movie, we did The Simple Life, which is what you opened with. That was the opening titles of Father of the Bride 2. And then The Sunny Side of the Street was the end credits. That's another Dorothy Fields and Jimmy McHugh song. And the great Ahmet Erdogan, gave me a record deal and said, make an album, I'll put it out. And I did.
And it was called A New Standard. Mm-hmm. One of the problems in dealing with standards is that we often associate them with the people who originally recorded them, and we hear that in the back of our heads. It's sometimes difficult making a song your own, isn't it?
I don't find it that way at all, you know. Honestly, I mean, I think that's what makes the Great American Songbook so fantastic, is that those songs somehow allow each artist to put his personality into those songs and make them new again. And I don't believe in copying. Like, why would I want to do The Way You Look Tonight like Frank Sinatra did? He already did it fantastically.
And there are enough people who do copy Frank
Sinatra. I mean, and that's why, you know, so I just did the songs that, like, I heard them for the first time. And it seems to have worked for me. I mean, I try to make them new again. I think the people ask me, what makes a standard? And I think what makes a standard called a standard is that you can love 25 versions of these songs. You can love 100 versions. They've been around 70 years. Where the pop songs that I came up with, you know, there's usually one good version.
Right. And we associate a Stevie Wonder song with Stevie
Wonder.
Yeah,
you don't want to hear, and, you know, even Bridge Over Troubled Waters, which was a great song. After Simon and Garfunkel, who you want to hear sing it? Or Elton John's Your Song. You know, these songs, you can love Tony Bennett's version, Harry Connick's version, Nora Jones's version, Rod Stewart's, mine. You can love 25 or 50 versions of the same song. Ella's, you know, Billie Holiday, on and on and on.
Steve Tyrell is my guest. He now has 8 albums, including A New Standard, the one we've been discussing, which was recorded for Atlantic in 1999. More recently, there's This Time of the Year on Columbia, Holiday Standards, and coming out in just a day or two.
It just came
live
out
at the Carlisle.
Live at the Carlisle, yeah.
On the Standards album, a new standard, you actually put together some pretty great jazz musicians, many of whom played on the original recordings of the songs. Clark Terry, Harry
right.
Sweets Edison, mm-hmm. Toots Thielsman, Louis Belson.
Plas Johnson.
That must have been thrilling.
Fantastic. I mean, and that was my concept. I wanted to make a modern arrangements. I wanted to bring these songs into the 21st century, but I wanted at the same time to pay tribute to the people who did this in the first place.
So when you're doing it, are you producing your own record
yeah.
in the same way you might have produced it for somebody else?
Yeah, yeah.
That's like an actor directing himself.
Well, you know what? This is more like a painting, you know? It's like whenever you produce someone else, your job is to get their performances. It's their album, not the producer's album. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in there to see, for Rod Stewart, for instance, to bounce off of and say, hey, man, I think we could do this way or that way and give suggestions. But it's his album. But this thing happened late in my life. It gives me a chance to make my own little creative statement, whether anybody likes it or not.
Do you ever have problems when you're producing a record and somebody has a very different idea of how the thing should go?
No.
Because they're putting themselves in your hands?
No. I mean, we just talk about it, and sometimes you're right and sometimes you're wrong. You know, it's like directing an actor. I'm sure sometimes you have to talk people into or, the hardest thing is, I think, is to tell someone you can really do it better, man, without, you know, especially if they're happy with it. And you, when you do that, you better be right.
Now, a lot of lovers of the Great American Songbook wonder, why aren't we getting songwriting of this caliber today? Do you think that songwriting is just as good today?
No, absolutely not. This was an art form that I don't know if it'll ever exist again.
For example, I just saw Finian's Rainbow, and it's impossible to walk out of that show without singing three or four songs.
Yeah.
And yet I know that doesn't happen. I can hear the same song on the radio 50 times, and I'm not sure I could ever sing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I was talking about a new song.
You know, one time I thought about this. You know, I'm a big baseball fan, and I have everything about the Yankees. And you go see the old Yankee Stadium and how people used to go to the game, you know, with their top hats and ties in the middle of the summer, looking a certain way and having a certain kind of thing about them. Well, that's what these songs have. They have a little top hat and a tie, and they're from an era that doesn't exist. Now people wear their Nike shirts and their hats sideways, you know. It's just the consciousness of this kind of writing. Plus, I also think that the music business kind of messed up a little bit, songwriting and singing, because there got to be a period when the singer-songwriter came into being in the 70s, where you didn't have credibility, supposedly, unless you could write and sing your own songs. Well, if that were the case, we'd have never heard George Gershwin's songs, and probably Frank Sinatra would have never got a deal, mm-hmm. you know? And what would have happened to Ella Fitzgerald?
Or Irving Berlin.
Yeah, exactly. If Irving Berlin had to play his own songs in his one key that he played in, what would we do? You know, so it was kind of like it got in the 70s, this kind of crazy thing that really kind of took away the craft of writing songs.
You, the latest album is Live at the Carlisle, and recording live is different than going to a studio, because in the studio you can make everything perfect.
Yeah, that's right.
So what, you just do a lot of tapes and hope that
a couple of nights, you know. Try to record for a couple of nights, so if you mess up one night, you can have a second shot at it. Because the biggest thing is setting it all up, you know.
But a lot of musicians tell me that they're energized by performing before an audience,
oh,
and
yeah.
that actually leads to better performances than even those perfect performances in a studio.
Yes,
can
it's
never
a different thing. Totally,
with.
It's like a play or a movie. You know, a record is like a movie, and playing live is like a play. You know, and you get that kind of energy from the audience, and every audience is different, and you can sing the same song every night for 2 months and it'll be different every night. You know, it'll be, there's some kind of energy that happens live, and I love it. I love playing live.
And you'll be at the Carlisle through New Year's Eve.
Through New Year's Eve. This is my fifth year, and I'm doing a new standard. I'm celebrating its 10th year and playing that at the Carlisle. There's one thing that happened I wanted to tell you about from a new standard. It's like the gift that keeps on giving, you know. This was the album that Rod Stewart heard and decided he wanted to do standards. That's how I started working with him. About 2 months ago, the crew of the Endeavour space shuttle decided that they wanted to be awakened every day to the sunny side of the street. So, I mean, that's unbelievable.
And your version.
My version, yeah. So I immediately called Mission Control, you know. Hey, what's the royalties like on the moon, man? You know? And, no, I'm going to Houston to play 2 concerts, and they're going to give me a crew jacket and a little plaque. I mean, isn't that cool? Who would have thought, right?
Well, we're going to go out with Give Me a Kiss to Build a Dream On from the new live album. And my great thanks to you for coming by and talking with us. Steve Tyrell, performing at the Cafe Carlisle through December 31st, New Year's Eve. That's at 35 East 76th Street at Madison Avenue. And for information about tickets and related matters, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. And don't forget, there's a new CD that's coming out from New Design Records.
Yes.
Called Steve Tyrell at the Cafe Carlisle.
Live at the Cafe Carlisle.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. What a pleasure to talk to you, man.
Give me a kiss to build a dream on, and my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this, a kiss to build a dream on. Give me a kiss.